summed this up, I don't know.
All 1 hour 50.
It's kind of objects and how.
All 1 hour 50.
Superstitions of how. The power of the objects, or how things are ascribed to objects, power is ascribed to an object, or meaning is ascribed to an object. Superstition, but also mental health. Your point about the trying to describe what art is to somebody as being a bit like, would you rather have David Beckham's football boots or a brand new pair of football boots?
I had to do that because my mate has got the pub conversation of like. Normally it starts with Tracy Emin's bed and then it's me trying to find some equivalent. One of my pals has got a pair of David Beckham's football boots, smelly, sweaty, been played in. And I said, alright, I'll swap with them stinky ones for an identical box fresh pair. And of course, don't be daft to them. And it's the way that that narrative activates that object and attaches itself to that. Or activates the object, and that's the best way I've found of explaining that to myself and to my pals, if you know what I mean, which sort of extends to everybody else, if you know what I mean. Once you've worked it out within that, you kind of just.
So, do you think?
I've got a friend who was a contemporary of Damien Hirst and Rocksmith. And he hasn't made it. But he's got a Damien Hirst print on his wall. And he's always referring to it. So he now has seen the value of art. But I can't help but feel the bittersweetness around him and the whole. It just reveals so much about what's happened.
That object reveals so much.
Well, the dynamic of him and the
object.
Yeah, it's what that object reminds him of, it's a reminder of him over his own. And it's getting bigger and bigger every day, isn't it? Yeah. But then it's over the edge, and then he'll go, I'm so glad I'm not Damien Hirst. Yeah. <laughs> Yeah. What's your name? Richard. Thank you. Richard Lozell, L-A-Y-Z-E-W. That's good. It's funny. L-A-Y. Y-Z-E-W.
But the bit that caught my eye was the sort of the superstition and the and the sort of irrational attitude to certain objects and the importance placed on certain things, like the toothbrush thing. It seems like maybe that's just really symbolic,
yes,
rather than. And sort of setting the symbolism up, and then the rest of it can follow on from that symbolism or that like impetus.
A few years ago, I did a little project with a friend, and we did we wanted to invent some new superstitions, and then we did a poll where we got people to vote on which their favourite one was. And I think the favourite one was if you eat walnuts, then you can forget your past.
Yeah.
And there were other ones as well that were really.
If you Google it, then it's the internet. That's the modern one, isn't it?
I didn't know that one, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But then that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing about the superstitions, you don't know. That's what makes it so powerful.
What if it actually happened?
What if you got. Something landed on your head because you went under the ladder.
It's kind of like praying wildly on your deathbed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like life of. It's like. Kind of put a. You kind of try everything at that point, haven't you? That's a lot of
problem. But why do we need to do that to objects? Why can't we just have faith, I suppose? It's like, why are we doing that to objects?
Yeah.
much we give to ourselves. Yeah. So, if we put ourselves through that imaginary fear, connected to that object or that imaginary, like, reassurance. But is it imaginary?
Well, that's when if you get into the mind of like someone in psychosis, they would think it was real. For them, it would feel real, wouldn't it? You know, the radio would be communicating with them. But then I've got a limited experience in working with people with psychosis, but I have done a tiny bit. And whenever I was with them, I couldn't say, oh no, that's not true. I had to engage. When they were saying about aliens, or that they saw a beast on the grass at night time outside of their window, it's like, oh really? I didn't want to disbelieve them, because what if it was true? You can't. It was his experience. You have to kind of, I don't know, which is not very helpful way of treating something, but anyway.
My friend in Manchester, sort of, is in a hospital. I have sort of phases of it. It's like one of the latest ones, like being in the Jacksons. And like that. And we kind of like say, like we kind of don't want to we don't want to be too aggressive saying no. It seems like this is the phase that's happening, that's going through.
It's like when you're doing reminiscence or something with an older person, dementia. Right. If you say no, actually it isn't 1975, and actually your husband is dead. That's not going to change anything. It doesn't help. So that's a better way. It's just to say yes. You know, tell me about you. Tell me about your husband. You know, so. No, okay.
So we're talking about the mind.
What, and how it projects onto an object, or
but what's interesting,
arrangements of objects seem really relevant to superstition.
And also how the idea goes so new from the object. You know, like, I mean, I can understand one with the ladder, because something could fall on your head.
Gravity's at work there.
Gravity's at work. But something like, I don't know, if you, this thing about the shoe being upturned, I mean, how is that going to bring you bad luck? Or stirring with a knife stirs up strife. That's one thing I can never do either, stir with a knife.
Upside down horseshoes. That's symbolism, isn't it? It's supposed to drain out, isn't it? That's gravity again. Maybe it's gravity.
The gravity is at the root of all of this.
Gravity.
But then when a lot of these superstitions were sort of cast into being, there were a lot of forces at work. The gravity was a big unknown until relatively recent. Other things as well.
But I think maybe superstitions maybe came out of people with OCD. I don't know, because that would explain why they're so, the object and what it means or signifies is so removed. Because, for instance, like I've got the same thing with toothbrushes, but with the flannels. if my little girl's flannel is upside down, then I think something bad's going to happen to her. So I have to turn the flannel right way up on the radio. Actually, what's a flannel got to do with her destiny? It's got absolutely nothing to do with it. I don't want to turn this into a therapy session at all, but it's just...
I wonder if it's when you have a family and there's something bigger than yourself that you need to nurture or support or something. I don't know if it's... Is it that? I don't know. I haven't got a family.
I think you want to want to extend your protection out into the world, to the all the way around the globe, so that you can protect them, but you never.
But it's interesting that that gets reduced down to the flannel. You know what I mean?
It's interesting.
Reduced down to the things that you yourself can control.
Yeah.
Like that within your remit.
Yeah.
If you can't do all that, then you...
Because we kind of know that we can't control it, really.
Yeah, exactly. I have tried to turn the flange sideways or move the toothbrushes slightly to see if I can just break it.
It's not a silly question. How do you know whether a flange is flammable? No, how do you know whether a flange is flammable or not?
It's only if you had to tell me. It's got a picture of snow as well.
Superstition, like getting, I've slightly gone on about the golf ball anyway, but getting back to sports and superstition, and
tell me about them.
I played cricket and I played with a lad who had to get ready in the right order.
Really?
And all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yes.
Touched the grass, kind of touched the grass before you go on, and routine, maybe,
Routine.
I've seen somebody playing tennis, and I can't think of who it is, but one of the female tennis players in Wimbledon, she has to bounce the ball so many times, and it gets really irritating. She's just saying, come on, just she always has, I think, six times or something.
Right, and then, there's four-leaf clover in the shoe. My mate's a bit of a runner, and he has a four-leaf clover under his insole in his training.
A real one?
Yeah.
I've been to clover.
Four-leaf clover,
Steel.
I found one of those. I found one in France on my bike. I do a bit of work very much related to the golf ball thing, where I cycle to Paris and blow up my tyre. It's like, Duchamp's 55cc's Paris Air. It's kind of that, but I cycled to Paris. I worked out how much air's in the tyre and inflate it to that, and then I cycle back. So it's like the narrative attached to that object, but effectively that object is fresh air.
Yes.
But I had a wee at the side of the road and I looked down and it was a four-leaf clover. On my fridge, but anyway.
So do you think that air could be an object almost?
Well, it was the packaging almost, if you know what I mean.
A bit like Marty Green is believing.
Yeah, but it was, I made the wheel, and to activate the work, to make the work, I made an addition of three to make it. So I had to go three times. So if somebody wants to work, I cycle to Paris, let me tie it down, blow it with Parisian air, and then cycle back. So and I was interested in this idea of this fresh air being exchanged, but the journey and the narrative and the support of all that was
the journey
that activates the work. And I was really satisfied to sell somebody fresh air in that like world, if you know what I mean. But there was quite a lot of labour involved.
Did they buy this piece?
Yeah, well, I did three, and I've sold three.
So they bought the wheel?
They buy the wheel, but in a weird way as well, they buy me for like a fortnight to cycle to.
Oh, I see.
Where'd you
start from?
Sheffield. I like cycling, so it's not fun, but I was really interested in the way a narrative and an event or even a fictional narrative can...
Yes,
can,
you didn't have to go
Yeah,
to
I didn't have to go, but...
Could just
I,
go to
yeah,
like
I could lie.
Loughborough or something.
Yeah, yeah. Who cares, really? As long as... But that, the way that narrative activates an object seems to me is what I do, really. It seems that.
So did you think that Parisian air has like a... Do you believe, or are you thinking about other people believe in you, that the Parisian air has a different quality to our air, that it's a bit more kind of sassy?
Just specific geographical point, and relating to that Duchamp's bill. It's kind of a combination of two of Duchamp's works, like the bike wheel in the studio, and then the 55cc's of Paris Air that you trapped in that like glass ampule. So it was like just putting them two together and then the other things. But Well, that came from me basically ripping off that Andreas Leminski work, that golf ball. Just, but it's as old as time, isn't it? Like this, you know, bits of the cross, bits of the original cross. Yeah. If it was.
Or was it the Saints?
Yeah, this cross would have been like the biggest structure on earth, wouldn't it? There was that many bits, the Catholic Church on earth, that many bits of this cross. But we all kind of, you know, the sort of fiction of
that. Fiction. Yeah, fiction.
What was in your mind for this topic? What was in your mind for this?
This business about... superstition and meanings ascribed to objects through superstition, but also how that could tip over into things like neurosis and psychosis. So how the mind, like you say, the mind almost seeks out ways in which it can anchor belief onto things. I suppose it's a bit token though, isn't it? It's a bit like a totem. It becomes like a faith where you, like you're saying, with bits of the cross or, you know, it's like it having something to
faith,
put your faith into something. Into, when I went travelling in, we were in South America, and I took a tiny, tiny little Buddha with me. Not that I'm particularly, I'm not a practicing Buddhist, but I was interested in Buddhism. And my sister had given it to me, that was what was more important. And I held it really, really tightly, all the way around South America, thinking, I mustn't lose this Buddha, I mustn't lose this Buddha. And then I lost the Buddha in a taxi cab in Buenos Aires. And I remember thinking, oh, I've lost it, I've lost the Buddha, oh no. And then I realized that the Buddha was probably trying to tell me, don't get attached to me, I'll be all right, even if I'm in a sewer, you can let me go. Yeah. And then I thought, phew, the Buddha's taught me something. But this is all in my head.
So is it like a burden now? Do these objects become burdens?
Yes, they really restrict you. They tie you down. But it's you that ties yourself down. It's not the object.
Well, I think they can free you too, because I've got a favourite hat and a favourite scarf.
Yes,
The hat's Japanese, and the scarf came from the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, the Great Mirror is called. And I'm doing a language class once a week in the city there. And last week I left them both behind. And I got to the tune, I thought, fuck. I left them. And I rushed back, and it was just a case of this. No one else had anything in. I thought, I've got to let it go. I've got to let it go. It's okay. And I got home and told my partner. She was upset because she was attached to both of them, and I was more upset.
Yeah.
I was also ridiculous. It's just a scarf and a hat. It's just ridiculous. And then I got an email from the teacher telling me she handed them in, and I thought, fantastic. Don't she pick them up? Would I wait till the sweets? I picked them up last night. And they're just a hot scarf and a hat. But they made me happy. They do make me happy.
And it's the meaning.
I feel better for having them back. I do feel better.
Meaning and value, isn't it, that you have in those things?
Yeah.
Because of where you got them or who gave them to you.
Oh, they're nice as well.
Does losing them and then finding them again reinvigorate them?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know yet. It's possible.
Yeah. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's possible.
That sounds like a piece of work, doesn't it?
To like artificially reinvigorate some precious objects.
And I was going to mention some of the other group downstairs, but my mother died relatively young, and my dad sort of had 20 odd years on his own. We didn't have a very good relationship, but over those years I got to know him better and it sort of improved. And I worked on a Greek island most years, and I used to always buy on a plate. They weren't particularly nice plates, but there's one of the things on the island is they paint plates. So every year I'd bring the plate back, like I took one, got one from Australia to plate. So it was like, hey, Dad, here's a plate. Put them all on his wall. And then he died. And I thought, what do I do with the plates? All the plates that I'd given him. So I've kept all those plates, and I don't know what to do with them. Still, this is years ago. I've got them in a stash.
Do you like having them?
Not really. I feel uncomfortable because I don't know what to do with them. somebody said I'll smash them up and make something, then that doesn't feel right.
Would it?
You would want to ceremoniously smash them. Maybe. Maybe it needs to
ritual. Yeah, but it feels like the idea of grinding them up and remaking them into something. Like, there's a piece of work by Ryan Gander where he gathered all the crumbling dust from modernist buildings that were falling down and remixed it in. You can remix the concrete and it'll like go off again and maybe sort of work out like the substance of the, well, it's again the narrative attached to the materials used to make the object, I suppose, isn't it? Maybe.
Yeah, that's the value in that.
Yeah, it accrues like all that value.
What's the name?
Ryan Gander. At first look, you think it's a bit of a naff. It's a gravestone to modernism, anything like that. But then you read the material list and you find that out, and it suddenly like activates the work in your brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Switches it on, sort of thing. By the.
So you've been mentioning a lot of artists. Mm-hmm. So do we think that artists are very good mediators of this subject?
Of this subject.
Your subject. Mm.
Do we try and create a bit of superstition around that?
Yeah. Well, that's what kind.
Well, are they our artists? Are we all artists? Yeah.
Oh, I don't like calling myself.
No, I don't know what the point I'm allowed to stop calling myself, but at some stage in my life, I might start.
I used to call myself an artist, and the work went rubbish. No, I don't. Try not to, if you know what I mean.
What, as a result of
calling myself an artist? Yeah, and I started feeling slightly more comfortable about calling myself an artist, and we went back.
Oh.
So I stopped. So.
Did you call yourself
now? Yeah. I think. I don't know.
Well, whether or not we use the term, we're all in it in some way, aren't we?
Yeah. Are you an artist?
Yeah.
You call yourself an artist?
I do.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Well, partly for me, it's because
ish. I'm not okay.
I'm not, that's fine.
Is that my favourite word? Are we good mediators, or is it such a common concern that we're sort of driven into questioning these things?
But do we fetishise things?
Yes, that's what that is. Yes, you see that word in the thing we got from it was that was in your email, wasn't it? Mm. That word fetish, and I thought fetish.
Yes.
What am I going to? What's this going to be? What's going to happen to me? Mm. Is this going to be like a sect where things happen to us? And I don't know who these people are, but I'm trusting them. But you're right. It is like a sort of a. Is it us doing the fetishizing, or are we just inflicting fetishism on other people? Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get them to succumb to our fetishism.
Generate it. So, maybe.
Fetishism, you see, it's a very loaded word.
It fascinates me with Apple Macs. They seem to do it really well, don't they?
They really do, because my son has mental health issues. And his relationship to Max is unbelievable.
Right,
he just eats and sleeps Max.
Right.
And it really works for him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's his world.
Yeah.
But his relationship to Apple is a key part of his life.
Yeah.
It should really be.
Yeah, yeah. And for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that alright?
Well, it means that we've got an area of communication. And this communication's challenging. So in that sense, it's all right. I think, I don't know what all right means. I mean, obviously, I would like him to have other things that he was obsessed with as well. More of a different world, that wasn't so in and out of the screen or the phone. So I think it's sort of kind of a locked, fairly locked relationship with those objects.
But that's a bit but similar to some superstitions.
But that's a bit being judgmental, really.
But I think that's how, that's very characteristic just of what humans do with objects, is to, it becomes like this locked thing, like how I am with the flannels on the toothbrush. Is it's really, it's a tight relationship that's very difficult to kind of, it's not.
The funny thing is when you go away on holiday, all the things that you're locked into, you come back, what the fuck is all that? What is all this? And then you start to get hooked in again.
Or you break, like, you like just coming back to sport thing, you actually forget to do your thing, and it's fine. And it's like, is that disappointing? It's like, I don't know. It's like you set it up, don't you? Maybe it's a way of just being able to get ready to do something. I don't know.
Or do you think it's just because we sort of feel obliged, or we have to have that sort of sense that there's greater meaning than just this, just the materiality of stuff. It's, there's got to be more to it than that. That's why we ascribe.
And every time something is explained reasonably well by science, it sort of erodes, starts to erode and all that. I don't know.
This is a comical aside, but I had a group of friends. I did quite a lot of rock climbing, but I had a group of friends that I climbed with who also did a lot of kayaking. Kayaking, I mean, off doing pioneering down rivers in Nepal and India and real serious intrepid stuff. And I had a real thing. There's a lot of, because it's so dangerous, people break their spines, people die. It's very, very good at what they do, but then it's so nice. It's a very dangerous thing to do, and you have trust in your ability and your friends. But they have so many superstitions. There's a lot of superstitions to do with water anyway, but then when you bring people who go on their purpose, but you put themselves in that situation, they have all their superstitions. But they had a superstition regarding Jimmy Savile. If anybody mentioned Jimmy Savile, that he was the unluckiest man alive, and you could have mentioned Jimmy Savile. But how strange is that?
Jimmy Savile
must have been very often in
conversations about the
area.
That's quite good.
That's strange.
Isn't that?
That's what's so interesting, is how you can be so removed.
Exactly.
It really has absolutely nothing to do with the superstition, you know, or with the troublesome outcome.
Nothing to do with rivers. It's sort of the American.
But is that kind of what art does as well, isn't it? It you know, like the urinal. What's that got to do with art, sort of thing, almost? You know, it's just so removed.
But yeah, it's still
maybe that's sort of what conceptualism is, isn't it?
It gives you something to direct your concepts at, I suppose, doesn't it? To frame it, to hold it, to test it against, maybe.
Jimmy Savile. It's almost like that's what it would be interesting to see how far removed could it be. That's about as far as I can imagine. But could it go even
just
further?
From the, you know. You think
that it probably could if it could go that far. But it would be wonderful to find out. Good. That thing you said about trying to introduce new superstitions.
Yeah, that's really
interesting. It feels like we need some new ones to.
Change the look of
I think that's got to be a new superstition.